This is Talkback Gardening with Deb Tribe and Sophie Thompson, live from the Adelaide Central Market on 891 ABC Adelaide, South Australia and Broken Hill.
Good morning and welcome to Talkback Gardening. Good morning, Sophie.
Good morning, Deb. Fun day down here.
It is lovely to be here amongst the hustle and bustle, the smells and sounds of the Adelaide Central Market. If you're coming down, you can ask Sophie Thompson a question live here on Talkback Gardening. I have a couple of ABC magazines to give away later in the program, one by phone and one by text. And we welcome your comments on the text line 0467922891. But we are going to be talking about urban wildlife. Why? Because we all have to live with it in our gardens, don't we, Sophie?
Well, it's not only that. You know, it's really important. One of the biggest threats to urban wildlife is a lack of habitat. And, you know, we'd love to see the bees and the butterflies and the birds, and we need to expand that and make sure our gardens are wildlife friendly. So we thought we'd get the best man for the job here to talk to us about that.
We certainly have. We've got him right here. James Smith is not just an urban zoologist. He is the author of the book on this issue, which is Wildlife of Greater Adelaide. He won the 2023 Peltzer Environmental Prize. He knows his stuff. So if you'd like to ask him a question, you've got him for about 25 minutes. So call in now on 1300 222 891. If you'd like to ask him a question, just pop your hand up and Simon will run out to you. James, welcome back.
Thank you. What a fantastic place to be on a Saturday morning.
Isn't it? Did you bring your shopping trolley so
Absolutely.
You can do your shopping afterwards?
Fantastic.
Well, where do we start? Because we get a lot of phone calls, don't we, Sophie? Always on Talkback Gardening, you would know, James, about possums eating this or something's eating that. You know, people can get very irritated with the wildlife in their gardens, birds that are flocking that never used to be there. And it is it a growing issue?
It's a constant issue. I wouldn't say it's growing. I wouldn't say it's declining either. But those that are gardeners, often we have their oases in what's becoming a more desolate landscape. As we have urban infill, we have less and less spaces. So the wonderful gardeners that are doing such a fantastic job are being somewhat more inundated.
And so it's about learning how to live with wildlife, right? You know, there are all these hollow-dependent creatures, whether they're, you know, birds or bats or possums. And people will see, as they walk around the parks, they'll see lots of nesting boxes going in. We should just talk, can we just talk briefly about hollows?
Cause sure.
My understanding is hollows take 80 to 100 years to develop in an old tree.
Most of our hollows across Australia develop into eucalypts. The earliest they can develop is 70 to 80 years, but in the majority of eucalypts, it's 120 to 150 years.
Wow.
So just think, if you hopped off the buffalo and you protected a red gum in 1836, it would only now just be large enough to support something like a rainbow lorikeet, Adelaide rosella, maybe a ringtail possum. Not a kookaburra, not a brush-tailed possum, certainly not a cockatoo of any kind.
My goodness. So if people love their wildlife and they love those creatures, that's why they should consider installing nesting boxes?
Absolutely. It's a fantastic thing. And the other reason we're out gardening is because it takes us back to nature. It gives us a connection. Mm. And any time you stop and look at something new or unusual in the garden, you're in the present moment, and it's so good for your health.
It is absolutely good. And if you're stressed and you can just focus on a bird or a bee or a butterfly in your garden, suddenly, you know, you feel that stress at a time when everyone has to have a way to manage our stress. Rather than look at a screen, it's far better to look at a beautiful creature.
Absolutely. It just falls away for the moment, and you come out of that moment and you're a little more refreshed.
Absolutely. Recently, I've just moved to my new property, and there were some old mallee trees that I didn't give enough respect to, and we ended up doing a bat survey, because you can get a bat detector, and we got 7 species of microbats on what is a totally denuded, almost moonscape, and yet these old mallee trees are harbouring 7 species. So those microbats, they're eating insect pests, they're eating mosquitoes.
Absolutely. I mean, most of them are eating half their own body weight in insects in a night, and lactating females have been known to eat up to twice their own body weight in insects in a night. They are just phenomenal.
So if you've got a mosquito problem in your backyard, that also means you've got a microbat deficiency disorder, doesn't it?
Absolutely.
So microbats are one of the holodependent creatures.
Yeah, we have 28 species of microbats in the state. Most of us think of microbats in caves. Well, indeed, 20 of them are totally reliant on hollows in trees. And about 6 of them will use trees or caves, and 2 are cave obligates.
Wow.
So, yeah.
So understanding bats is really important. Now, I do know that we've had a few people recently and at a public event I was at who were slightly concerned about the bigger bats that are coming in to their fruit trees. Some people I've met are like, okay, I love seeing you there, good on you, and others are not so understanding. How should we share with these new creatures that are in our landscape?
If we take a step back, how did they get here and why are they here? Mm. It's because of land clearance up in Queensland. So there has been so much land clearance in Queensland that these animals have come into conflict with a slightly more successful group of flying foxes called black-headed flying foxes as compared to the grey-headed. So that combined with they've been forced south. And there's also believed to be an element of climate change impact about that. So they used to be at the Victorian border, and slowly over time, they've come further south to Melbourne, across to the South Australia-Victoria border, into the southeast, and then finally, and I think it was 2009-2010, 40 were found in a pencil pine in Fullerton, and from there we have more than 30,000 here in Adelaide.
Gee, that's a huge expansion.
But this is a colony of creatures that are considered threatened.
Yes, yeah, nationally threatened.
Nationally threatened. Yeah, so while they've actually set up home here,
yes,
and they're doing well, we have to understand that they are at risk elsewhere. So we need to care for them.
Yeah.
So how can we live with these creatures?
Anytime we have a new arrival, it can be a real challenge. And what we need to be aware of are that they're actually primarily nectar and pollen feeders, and they do take fruit. And anytime we have fruit available, these are very clever animals, and they can fly 80 kilometres in a night. So if they find a food source, they can return to it. And exclusion, again, like our friends the possums, is or some of the bird species, is one of the only ways we're able to achieve that.
Yeah. Okay. So ultimately, it's about caging our produce, which we've done.
Yes.
I'm interested in your thoughts on plastic netting versus maybe wire netting. I didn't even warn you about that one. Sorry, James. And bear in mind, if you don't net properly, and there's lots of stuff on Gardening Australia, how to net a tree with plastic netting properly. If you don't net properly, you can capture birds and snakes and all sorts of creatures, and they die a horrible death. So
we're talking about it needs to be less than 5 millimetres.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
It needs to be small mesh that excludes it safely. All of the plastics have a limited lifespan. They're going to break down. If we don't manage them, they're going to either end in landfill or they're going to end in the environment. So mesh is much better if you can do it. But there are expenses involved, and it's not completely suited to what we're talking about on a garden scale at the moment.
Absolutely.
Really, is it?
But, you know, I've spent a lot of time working on KI. No one would consider, really, having a garden, having a veggie patch, or having fruit trees if they didn't have a wire cage. So maybe as we move forward, we need to plan for this. Mm. And when we're putting our fruit trees, you actually plan how they are. Can we put them in a group so that it's more efficient? So it's about moving, looking forward rather than reacting, I think.
Yeah.
And that's a really good point that you make, Sophie, because if you look at how South Australian gardeners were with their shade structures, even a decade ago, you wouldn't see many in gardens. Now you see them everywhere. The innovations are incredible. And that was something that came about through need as the climate changed. So maybe we do need to rethink how we are approaching sharing our produce going forward.
Absolutely.
And really interestingly, I spent more than a decade over in the UK And they often cage because of birds and other things that are going to take their berries and fruit. So there's certainly precedent elsewhere to do it.
Yeah. Well, look, we are going to pick up on quite a few questions. I can tell you that there's one particular bird that is attracting a lot of attention at the moment. Our very special guest on site here at the Adelaide Central Market is James Smith, urban zoologist. He's the author of Wildlife of Greater Adelaide and the 2023 Peltzer Environment Prize winner. We've got another prize winner next to us, Sophie Thompson. She is our regular Saturday Talkback Gardener. If you have a question, you can call in now on 1300 222 891, or you can ask live. Just pop your hand up and Simon will come to you with a microphone here at the Adelaide Central Market.
This is Talkback Gardening with Deb Tribe and Sophie Thompson, live from the Adelaide Central Market on 891 ABC Adelaide, South Australia and Broken Hill.
We are live at the Adelaide Central Market. We're getting some great texts through from you on your wildlife in your garden. Kathy says, I have a Rosella nesting box to give away. Love it to go to your property. Don't know if we can do that on here, Kathy. Sorry, but glad that you've got one. And this texter says, I have frequently have Adelaide Rosellas visiting me. They love the weed-ridden and seed-ridden neglected front lawn. I'm landscaping this winter and don't want to lose these lovely visitors. What can I do to keep them around?
Actually, what is perceived as weeds, some of those can be planted in your new garden. Moving and planting and considering what wildlife needs are and what you want to attract is a fantastic way to mix a whole range of plants across that front landscape, isn't it, Sophie?
Absolutely. And the front landscape, and even if you haven't got much, the verge. You know, we should actually stop calling it a verge. Costa got us to call it a verge. It should be a nature strip.
Fantastic.
And if everyone considered their nature strip and planted local native plants to be proactive, it would be amazing.
It would be.
Now, John from Hawthorne has got a different question for you on Eastern Rosellas. Good morning, John.
Good morning, people. James, I have a problem with Eastern Rosellas supplementing their diet by nibbling the stems of rose flowers about 150 or 200 millimetres below the flower, and that, of course, kills off the rose flower. I've tried netting, I've tried distractions, I've tried wire to trip them over. What do I do?
Wow, I have never heard that before.
Oh, I have, because those new rose shoots are full of sugar. And they love them. And it's almost like they taste it.
Candy.
And then they just go to the next one. And Walter Duncan up at Clare used to have a huge problem with them coming in and nipping the new rose shoots. And other rosarians have also had a problem. And sometimes they put a bit of, like, fishing line up so that when they come in, they clip it and it deters them, doesn't hurt the bird. They just become wary of it. There's also something called humming line. Have you heard of that?
Oh, so when the wind blows, it vibrates.
So putting a string line sort of, it's not exactly attractive, but it's not going to harm creatures and it's just going to deter them.
We certainly use fine strung fishing line, nylon, to try and deter microbats that sometimes get into roof spaces. So it doesn't catch them, it just sort of stops them. They fall temporarily and then they keep flying and are wary of it. So that's a great idea for the Rosellas.
Okay, so there was many years ago, I filmed a segment with the late Walter Duncan up at, and his wife Kay up at the Heritage in the Clare Valley, and there was discussion about the wire, and also with another amazing rosarian called Alex Cowald at Frosty Flat. So if you googled Gardening Australia plus Walter Duncan or Gardening Australia plus Frosty Flats, I think you'll find some segments where we talk about what to do for roses and rosellas that love those. You know, it's like a rosella with a chocolate habit.
That's right. It's rose like habit. It's the Adelaide Central Market. I get that, John. Thank you so much for the call. Live here on site, we've got Cynthia from Mount Osmond. Hi, Cynthia. What's your question for James?
Good morning. We live in Mount Osmond. We have a lot of cockies and ravens and magpies. We also have a lot of wildlife, but we have conifers on the garden, and I'd like to change the conifers to more Australian natives to attract more wildlife, but we do have a view, and I'd like not to have that impeded. So, sorry, what would you suggest for plantings, please, to swap over?
trees I'll pass to Sophie, but one of the things is I had a really good friend who is a landscape gardener, and 70%, gardens are typically defined by somewhere between 15 and 25% of the plants that are in there, and all the rest of them are background plants. So by making all of those background plants low and mid-story natives, you're going to bring in all that wildlife. And then there are both native conifers, but there are also eucalypts. Some don't get very high, but I would pass on the height question over to Sophie.
And one of the things also is if we talk about stories, you know, so you have your lower story and your mid story and your high story. Some birds, particularly wrens and creatures like that, they nest low, don't they, James?
Well,
and they need something prickly, is that right?
Prickly is always a benefit, but it's density that is important.
Okay,
lots of people complain about noisy miners, and one of the reasons we have the issue with noisy miners is we've opened up all the space, so all of the birds that would historically try and escape them don't have the luxury of somewhere to go to escape them. And there are five layers. The ground cover is so important, so rocks, logs, mulch or native debris is really important. Then the ground covers, low shrubs, which get up to about a metre, then shrubs that get up to about 3-4 metres, and then we've got an upper canopy. So all of those layers both connect things, so you're connecting the ground upwards and you're connecting across the landscape is really important. So getting that right, and that's where most of the biodiversity is, and then we get to see things that are above.
And you are nearby to State Flora at Blair. If you go to State Flora or Coromandel Native Plants, they're native plant specialists. And, you know, I'd take a little sketch or say, look, I've got, you know, 10 metres by 10 metres. What should I do? There's some great staff that will help you choose the right plants for you.
Thank Excellent. You very much.
Thank you, Cynthia. Lovely to see you here live at the Adelaide Central Market this morning. Now, we've got some big issues to cover, so we're going to have to jump right into them. Firstly, Sandy from Norwood. Not one I was expecting this morning, but we've got a duck issue. Hi, Sandy.
Hi there. I absolutely love ducks, but on the River Torrens. I've inherited this property and I've got two big fountains out the front with beautiful lilies and things. And of course, the ducks have migrated to the area.
Yep.
And I've done everything to try and get rid of them. Bird scarers and all sorts of things, but they're deterred from all those things. How can I prevent them coming back every few minutes?
Couple of questions. The ponds, how large are they? What are they surrounded by as well?
They're surrounded by lawn there's bushes and trees and everything else, but not near the ponds. So okay. They've got a free area to come into.
Now, interestingly, are the ducks that are there grazing on the lawn, or are they just interested in the pond?
They're not grazing on the lawn because it's Italian fake lawn.
Oh. Okay. All right. So they're likely to be
interested. They're sitting on the edge of the pond and then they jump in.
Okay. So they're likely to be Pacific black ducks. And going back to our how to resolve the Rosella or bat issue, stringing up, this time it would be thick wire because they'll tend to land and then waddle into the water. Fishing line around the pond and even across the pond at literally 10 centimetres high means they're not going to be able to swim or waddle or that sort of thing. So you're trying to, quite friendly way, exclude them without having impact on your visual amenity or a minimal impact on your visual amenity.
Yeah, I'm thinking of putting, while we were listening, I'm thinking of putting like the mesh on the top of the pond because I've also lost hundreds of dollars of fish because the other birds go fishing in there.
Okay, so we have a number of herons that will, or white-faced herons in particular, that will do that. So mesh is a really good way, and you could do it just under the water and it not really, again, impact the visual amenity.
Thanks, Sandy, for the call.
Thank you.
Got the big P question. I knew it would come up, and here it is. Jane from Henley Beach, managing possums. Hello, Jane.
How can we help you, Jane?
A friend of mine has a problem with rats and possums,
and she's about to give up on having any veggie gardening going on at her place. She's in the Port Adelaide Enfield Council, and some councils I know give out bait for rats, but also she wondered what to do about the possums because she thinks that they're also coming and nibbling on her, her veggies that she then doesn't get to eat.
Okay, the possums first, which is probably easier. As gardeners, we like things in nice, neat rows, and we like to put the same thing all together. And one of the things I encourage most is co-planting. So if you put chives or onions or garlic and intersperse that with parsley or whatever it is they are eating, they'll take a bite of something and they'll get not just what they want, but they'll also get the acidity of the garlic onion family, and they don't like that at all. If they are targeting one thing in particular, say it's a rose bush or whatever, a veggie, if you plant an oily plant around that, again, they don't like getting the oil. It might be rosemary, it might be thyme, some prostrate thing, because most people don't realise just how fastidious a cleaner possums are. Brush tails in particular have hollow fur, and it's that that keeps them both warm when it's cold and cool when it's hot. And if they get that oily or they get muck on that, it doesn't act as the same insulator. So I would look at co-planting and planting around to protect plants that are particularly oily.
And then the rat issue, because this is a common issue and people automatically want to go for baits. Now, baits have the potential, there's first generation and second generation, they have the potential to kill our beautiful birds of prey.
Absolutely.
So,
or kookaburras.
Yeah.
Booble gals, even magpies.
Yeah. So when we put a poison out, it's not a simple solution. It's having a off-target damage. So what would you say about managing rats?
Okay.
Now, this is from me too.
Yeah,
right now.
No, my question is, where are they breeding?
Yep.
Okay, so often rats thrive in a place that's particularly overgrown or complex. And if we can simplify and find out where they're breeding and have clear space around it, that greatly reduces the rats. Sometimes they go to ground and we can deal with that in other ways. Live traps is actually better, and then we can knock them on the head and it's safer. There are some good live traps around. They can be drowned or other things, but yeah.
Yeah.
Coming back to possums, on the text line, Rachel in the Southern Hills says, James gave me advice a few months ago when we had to replace a shed and evict the resident brush-tail possum, put in 8 of James' nesting boxes, possums happy. So that's a good outcome. Melanie says, please remind people never to touch a bat as they carry the Lyssa virus, which is related to rabies and has no cure.
That's really good advice. Whether it's alive or dead, Lyssa virus has never been recorded in South Australia, but antibodies have been recorded in bats here. The virus has been found on the eastern states and in the Northern Territory.
Okay. Michelle from Cadena says, I love my lizards in the garden. I have blue tongues, sleepies and skinks, as do I, and I do love them. And you're always encouraging us to plant for those creatures. And water at this time of year is important for them as well, James, I imagine.
Well, water is actually really important for much of the year because they rely on it and they come to know it's there. And even if they don't use it in early spring, by the time mid-spring comes around, they do it. But it needs to be clean and it needs to be reliable. So that means sometimes at this time of year, I'm out there 2-3 times a week filling up my bird baths.
Yeah. Oh, wonderful. And Emily at Port Augusta says, look who's been enjoying my bird baths with a picture of a kangaroo. Apparently it's also a good spot to have a nap under the shrub, plus the daily apple core. I'm putting the sprinkler on in my small front yard every morning and evening for the birds, bees and bugs, and I'm getting a lot of visitors. The flowers, pop-up rocket and others like psyllium help too. Thank you, Emily. Anne saying, what about infestations of black ants? Is there any wildlife that will help, or planting that will help get rid of them?
Now, that one's really tricky. There are actually a lot of species, but I think the species they're talking about is an introduced species of ant.
Okay. Yeah. And ants ultimately like dry. So if you've got a dry patch of soil, that's where they'll be. If you've got a really evenly watered garden, you know, without hydrophobic soil, they're less likely to take up residence, aren't they?
That's why we often find them under pergolas or paved areas, because it's dry. That sheds the water. They're dry underneath and they come up, and so your paving starts to go wonky.
Yeah.
Absolutely. But the other thing to remember about ants across much of Australia is they serve the role that earthworms do in the rest of the world. So they move seeds around, they create tunnels, they aerate the soil, they let air get in, and they allow water to penetrate as well.
And if you're lucky enough to have an echidna...
Further earth moving.
That's right.
Absolutely. Louise at Golden Grove says, I used to have many marbled geckos. Where have they gone and how can I get them back? I have retaining walls, ruby saltbush, creeping boobiella. Has the worsening rat pests pushed them out?
That's a really interesting question. I still see as many marbled geckos as I've ever seen. It might be a local thing. Something has changed there, but it sounds like they're doing all the right things to attract and retain them.
Well, look, we are out of time, James Smith. It goes so fast every time we see you. But, look, thank you so much for joining us here live at the Adelaide Central Market. Urban zoologist, author of Wildlife of Greater Adelaide. Let's get that right. 2023 Peltzer Environmental Prize winner. Thanks so much for spending a half an hour with us here in Talkback Gardening.
As always, it's an absolute pleasure. Thanks, Deb.
Thank you,
thanks,
James. How about a round of applause for James? Sophie Thompson is here for another half an hour, so we would encourage your Talkback Gardening questions.
Live from the Adelaide Central Market, you're listening to Talkback Gardening with Deb Tribe and Sophie Thompson on 891 ABC Adelaide, South Australia and Broken Hill.
To be down here at the Adelaide Central Market. Welcome to Saturday Talkback Gardening. Good morning, Sophie.
Good morning, Deb. It's fun to be with you in person, but particularly in this festive place.
Isn't it fantastic to come and say hello? But right now, we want your questions for Talkback Gardening on 1300 222 891. You can text your comments through on 0467 922 891. We've got some questions live here as well. And, of course, I've got a couple of ABC Gardening magazines to give away a little bit later in the program. One on the text line, if you'd like to get ready for that, and one on the phone line. So we'll do that as well. But let's start right here in front of the community kitchen is Tim from Myrtle Bank. Good morning, Tim.
G'day. How's it going?
Really well, thank you. But you've got some caterpillars you maybe don't want in your tomatoes.
No, they're eating my green tomatoes, and I've never had the issue before, so I'm not sure how to remedy it.
So they're entering the tomato near the top?
Yeah, entering the fruit and eating it.
Yeah, absolutely. So early in the season, and this is off the top of my head, it's Heliothus. It's a corn earworm or budworm. And they go in the top of tomatoes and then they make a mess of them. So they actually disappear naturally because beneficials come in and clean them up. But if you want to stop further damage happening, if you get one of the biological caterpillar products, so Dipel, which is based on Bacillus thuringiensis, or a product called Success, and if you spray, both of those are basically based on bacteria, living soil bacteria. If you spray the plant, that will protect them from further damage. But it's only an early season thing. In my garden, I usually don't get around to spraying, I hate to say. And I just find that suddenly I notice they've stopped and the beneficials have come in. So it's all the parasitoids that will clean up your caterpillars and things like that. So if you haven't got much diversity in your garden, I would actually make sure that you've planted lots of flowers like calendulas and umbels like chives, and even a type of saltbush if you can, because
Some saltbush out there, right?
Okay. So make sure you've got saltbush nearby, right? Okay. Even ground cover forms, because saltbush harbours the highest number of beneficials of any native plant, and they often harbour the parasitoids which manage those pests. So it's just an early season thing, and it will clear up, but you don't want them there, so I would use either Dipel or one of the Nature's Way products, which is not going to harm you, no withholding period. Okay.
Awesome. Thank you.
All the best with that.
And Tim, grab yourself an ABC or Organic Gardener magazine. If you've got a question, we can give one to Penelope.
Yeah.
Anyone here live that asks a question will get themselves an ABC Organic Gardener magazine. So just let Beck know if you'd like to ask one, or you can call through on 1300 222 891. Linda has done so from St Peter's. Linda, what's happening to your crepe myrtles?
Oh, hello. I did send through a couple of photographs. We've got four Zuni crepe myrtles in the front garden, and they've all got some sort of mildew. I think it looks like a powdery mildew, but I'm not sure. But we've got six other crepe myrtles, Natchez, Lipan, Tuscarora, Sue, and they're doing brilliantly, but they're in a more sunny part of the garden. This one is... The three that are affected in the front are affected by an overhanging Colrutera street tree.
Oh, okay. So all the Indian summer series of crepe myrtles are meant to be mildew resistant. But obviously, when a tree is in the shade, it's more likely to be under stress, and then that can cause problems. You haven't...
These are older. They were planted in 2015, and the others are about 5 years old.
Yeah, that shouldn't matter. There is the old-fashioned types of crepe myrtles, you know, say 30-plus years ago, they all got mildew. And also there's a new range of them that I'm not a fan of, and they're called Diamonds in the Dark. They're the ones with the dark foliage. I find they get mildew too. As far as what to do about your crepe myrtles, I don't really know. So whether you can either get some more air circulation and more sun to these plants, otherwise you either have to accept it, or you have to spray it, or you have to change the conditions where the mildew is forming. So basically, if they've got better air circulation, if they've got more sun, it should be less of a problem. But, you know, crepe myrtles, I mean, I don't know how big they are, but, you know, are they able to be moved to somewhere that's sunnier?
No. I'm inclined to give them the chop and replace them with something else.
Oh, that's, you know, that makes...
Oh, no.
How tall are they?
Oh, I'm just walking up to them now. They're way above me. My outstretched arm up high is about another metre on top of that.
Okay, so can I just put it out there? You know, if you have family or friends with some muscles, crepe myrtles can be pruned quite hard. You could easily cut them back to 2 metres.
Yes.
And if there was any way you could dig them out... you know, it might be worth considering, because they are magnificent trees, and you've got something with age. Mm. So if you could relocate them, you know, my last option would be to cut them out, because they're beautiful trees. So I wish I had some other news. I mean, you can try, some of the organic fungicides. You could also try and bring in some ladybirds, because there's a fungus-eating ladybird that will manage it for you. But
I have a few. It's a very much... I've got loads of good bugs. I've got a bee hotel.
Yeah, yeah. Well, so that's native bees. But, you know, the reality is... I don't know what. Either you change the conditions so the mildew doesn't grow, you treat the mildew, or you try and, you know, relocate those plants. None of those options are easy,
Sophie.
Lindy.
Yes,
Linda,
I know.
I wish I had an easier option
for
you.
Well, I hope you have a good result, Linda. Do let us know if you do, please. Thank you. 1300 222 891 is the number to call. Live here at the Adelaide Central Market, we're joined by Jeff from Nairn. Jeff, you've got a Queensland bottle tree.
Yeah, that's correct. And I think I've planted it too deep, because it's not looking very well.
It's not looking very well? Okay.
We've lost that mic altogether.
So Jeff thinks he's planted it too deep because it's not looking very well.
So we're just trying to grab another mic for you, Jeff.
Here we are. Here we go, Jeff.
Jeff.
The joys of an outside broadcast.
Yes, live radio, fly by the seat of your pants,
we what you're
saying.
Yeah, yeah.
Yes.
So you think you've planted your Queensland bottle tree too deep?
Yes, because I've looked at others around Mount Barker, and some of them are on a mound, and others well, they're not on a mound, but they're on a slope. And I've planted other ones that are on a slope and they're looking beautiful.
Yep.
But the one in my backyard looks terrible.
Okay. So...
And I'm wondering if I could raise it up.
How long ago did you plant it?
Oh,
and how big is it?
It's roughly that high now.
Yep.
Yeah, roughly.
Yep.
And I planted it, let's say, 2 years ago, but time gets away.
Yeah, it does. Absolutely. You know, obviously, you're thinking about whether you can dig it up. So if it's only a good metre, easy to dig up, and then make a mound and replant it in that mound. Is that what you're thinking?
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking because I've seen others around Mount Barker.
Yeah.
At the council depot that are on a mound.
Yeah.
And well, they're looking fantastic.
Yeah. So you could certainly try that. They do need good drainage. The other thing, the ones around Mount Barker, they're often in areas that are frost-free. Are you in a frost-free area?
No,
are you in
a frosty
valley?
I'm in Nairn.
Yeah.
And we get frost.
You do.
Because you've mentioned saltbush a lot during the broadcast, and my saltbush gets killed with the frost.
Really? I used to grow it at Mount Barker and minus five, and mine survived the frost. Wow.
It loses the leaves completely, but...
Wow.
But as soon as
the warm weather comes, bang.
Okay.
Well, that's it. Thanks, Jeff.
There's obviously a risk to replant your bottle tree. I wouldn't be doing it right now.
Okay.
Right? I would be doing it, say, in March-ish, when there's still warmth in the ground because we want the roots to recover. Ideally, I would have done it in spring, right? But, you know, I'd do it in March-ish so there's still warmth in the ground so the roots can recover. Make sure that it's in a nice warm position, not in a cold, frosty hollow where it doesn't see the sun.
No.
A nice warm position, and make sure that it's got good drainage. And obviously, seaweed-based plant tonics, there is a risk with this, but, you know, there's a risk with leaving it there that it won't thrive. So good luck with that.
Thanks, Jeff.
Appreciate that. And Jeff might be onto something, you know, because coming back to the crepe myrtle, this texter says maybe it's a problem this season due to the very wet spring. Maybe fine in normal spring, but it's been pretty dry, hasn't it?
Well, no, it has been wettish. But, you know, ultimately, Zuni is a crepe myrtle that's an Indian summer series and it's meant to be powdery mildew resistant.
Right.
So, yeah.
Okay. Lucy from Blackwood, you've got a standard grevillea, but it's got a bit of damage on its trunk.
Yes.
Hi.
I've got a photo here to show Sophie.
Oh, even better.
We've got a standard grevillea and I feel like a cat might have done some initial damage.
Yeah.
Not 100% sure.
Yeah.
But it seems to be getting worse. And then I thought maybe borers, because you often talk about them. No.
So standard grevilleas are grafted on grevillea robusta rootstock.
Yes.
So that's as tough as old boots and doesn't get borers. So I wouldn't particularly... Well, it's not known to get borers. It does look like something has scratched it.
Yeah.
And caused that damage. Can I ask, does that face west? That side of the trunk?
That will be east.
Okay.
Yep.
So the reason I was asking is if it's getting worse, sometimes they can get sunburn, right, on a bit of an injury.
Yep.
So what I would be tending to do is to do something to protect that trunk.
Okay.
So whether you even get a bit of brush, you know, a few prunings and just wrap it around like, you know, brush fencing.
Oh,
you
I
know,
see. Yep.
Just to sort of put it around. So check it every now and again, open it up and see what it is. But I think you'll find it will heal up.
Okay, I did see a tiny little white insect going in and out. Is that just a minute?
As Sophie reaches for the phone and wants to expand it again to try and find evidence.
Oh, that's so tricky. They're not known to get borers, and borers are usually pretty... it looks like there's an injury, and then it's got a bit of... rot or something happening in there.
Yeah.
I tell you who I'm going to suggest you go to see is Coromandel Native Plants.
Oh, great,
right? Because they have been selling standard grevilleas forever.
Excellent.
And so get their advice on what to do.
All right. But otherwise...
If it was west-facing, for example, things can get sunburn on the trunk and then there's a bit of rot and all sorts of things. But be trying to protect it.
Okay.
See what they say first.
Okay, excellent. Okay. Thank you very much, Lucy.
Thanks, ladies. That's great. Thank you very much. We are Talkback Gardening live from the Adelaide Central Market. Sophie Thompson is here, ready to take your calls and take your questions here live from the market. You're listening to 891 ABC Radio Adelaide, South Australia and Broken Hill. I'm Deb Tribe. I've got a couple of ABC Gardening magazines to give away, one by phone on 1300 222 891, one if you put your full name and postal address by text on 0467 922 891.
Live from the Adelaide Central Market, you're listening to Talkback Gardening with Deb Tribe and Sophie Thompson on 891 ABC Adelaide, South Australia and Broken Hill.
We certainly are. Lovely to be with you this morning. It's just so exciting here at the Adelaide Central Market. People are sitting down, eating their delicious breakfasts, drinking teas and coffees and all sorts of beverages. It's lovely. Sophie Thompson is next to me, which is always a good Saturday morning. Sophie, just on the text line, Kirsten from Mount Barker wants to know, what is your favourite climbing vine in the realm of jasmine, potato vine, etc.? I have a mostly shaded area alongside the house, clay soil further down, and the one jasmine I've planted is doing well in the shady spot.
Okay, the only jasmine for a semi-shaded or shaded spot is Chinese star jasmine. It's not actually a jasmine. It's Trachylospermum jasminoides, jasminoides meaning jasmine-like flowers, and it's one of the few climbers that will grow in the shade and keep foliage to the bottom. Most climbers in the shade run to the top of the fence and you've got these daggy bits down low. So Chinese star jasmine for a shaded or semi-shaded spot is my absolute go-to. Having said that, I also love normal jasmine, which is what we sometimes call common jasmine. I love the perfume. It's also the perfume that gives many people a headache. But it's better in a sunnier spot and somewhere down the back of the yard, so, you know, its perfume can waft up to you. So Chinese star jasmine is definitely the way to go.
I knew you were going to say that. I'm learning about you, Sophie, as we spend time together. Roz is in the Adelaide Hills. Roz, you've got some Chinese cedars. What's the problem?
Good morning, girls. I rang Sophie some time ago because they were suckering, and we took your advice. We didn't cut them out. We kept them. There's three in a clump. And I just wonder, how long are they going to keep suckering for? They're about 10 years plus old now.
Yeah, I think... So the Chinese cedar is Cedrella sinensis, or it's been renamed Tuna sinensis, and it has that beautiful pink new growth. And I just love it. You know, there's actually one growing in a random garden in Coonalpan, which gives me hope that I might be able to grow one in my new desert property. No offence to the locals. They've been telling me off for calling it the desert. Anyway, I think once they start to sucker, they will continue, I hate to say. They form a thicket once, so probably there's been root disturbance and they've started, but once they start, they'll continue. You know, if that's really not going to work for you, it mightn't be the right plant, but I would just accept them forming a thicket. And, you know, they're one of those plants that you, in spring they take your breath away, and for the rest of the year you don't really notice them. They're a bit insignificant. So I don't know what to say, Roz. They are a very special plant. If you can learn to live with it, they shouldn't sucker a long way away. They generally just form a thicket.
Yeah, it's fine. I can live with them.
Oh, good on you, Roz. Good on you.
Well done.
And, I'll be adding one out in my garden because they are amazing. If people don't know what they are, Google Chinese cedar and you'll see, you know, this bright pink new growth in spring that's breathtaking.
Fantastic. Thank you very much for calling in. Dorothy is called from the Eyre Peninsula. Now, your tomato flowers are dropping off. That's no good, Dorothy. Good morning.
I've planted four mighty red tomatoes. They're over a metre tall now. Had lots and lots and lots of tomatoes have grown down low in the bush, but the new, I picked the first one this morning and it's about 2 inches in diameter. But the others, the flowers that are setting now, and there are plenty of them, they all just turn up their tails and die.
Okay. So now, Dorothy, where are you on Eyre Peninsula?
Yes.
Where? Where
at
on Eyre Peninsula?
At Port Neal.
Okay, beautiful place. It's been pretty hot, right? I would imagine you've had some brutal weather in the last couple of weeks.
Yeah, but not that hot. And I didn't put a shade over them for the day that happened. But most of the days we haven't had them very hot. It's hot elsewhere, but not here.
Okay, there you go. How they well fed? Have you done everything normal with regards to nutrition?
I probably haven't given. I set the soil before they were planted. I did quite a lot then. I haven't done a lot since then.
Okay, so I think I'd be starting to make sure that you feed regularly. If you have a soluble fertiliser you use, I'd be doing that, because tomatoes are hungry plants. And bear in mind that you probably planted them a few months ago. All that soil prep you did, the plants probably used most of that up by now. So if you use a slow-release pelletised organic fertiliser, I'd be adding more. If you use soluble fertilisers, I'd be doing that regularly. And so if it's not a heat or weather-related issue or a water-related issue, it's a nutrition-related issue. So, start feeding regularly, Dorothy. And I think, you know, we've had a weird season where one moment it's sort of cool and then next moment it's quite warm. And the tomatoes will take a while just to get into sync. But make sure that you keep them well fed, Dorothy. That would be the only thing I can think about. I love Eyre Peninsula. I'm coming over to Kimber on the Australia Day long weekend. Amazing place. Beautiful place.
Okay.
Good on you, Roz.
Thanks,
good on you,
Roz.
Dorothy.
Yes.
Sorry.
We're getting confused. The screen's got... Yes, Andrew from Mylaw. We're coming back to the pea problem, or pea friend of possums.
Pecan.
And pecans.
Possums on pecans.
Yes. Hi, Andrew.
Yeah. Hi, Deb. Hi, Sophie. I've got a pecan tree that's 6 metres tall. It's 15 years old. It hasn't got a single leaf on it. I suspect about 6 weeks ago it was stripped clean by a family of about 5 ringtail possums.
Yeah.
My gut feel is it's not going to survive with a full canopy or a full-size tree, and I'm prepared to drastically cut it back to give some of the very small buds that are trying to push through a chance. Because with the warm weather coming up, I can't see it surviving. My question is cutting it right back a good option? And two, how much should I take back?
It is a risk, Andrew, at this time of year, obviously. But long term, it's a risk if you don't. I would consider contacting the Rare Fruit Society to find out how much they recommend you could take off. I would send them photos so they can see, and ultimately moving forward, I would work out how you can protect your tree from possums. So are there other trees that overhang that form a possum highway? So possums often go from big trees and then they drop onto smaller trees. Or are they climbing up? If they're climbing up, you can put trunk barriers on that stop the possums climbing up. So certainly I'd be contacting...
done that on Gardening Australia a couple of weeks ago. They had an aluminium heavy duty foil which I put around the trunk, and that's, I think it's fixed it, because there was an oak tree suffering the same thing, but the oak tree has recovered beautifully with a full canopy. This one, nothing except some tiny buds starting to come through, but a 6 metre tree, it won't survive summer.
No, and the other thing, obviously, is you have to make sure you keep the water up to it and really nurture it, because if it's trying to put a new crop of leaves on and it dries out, it's not going to be happy. But I would contact the Rare Fruit Society to get their suggestions on how much you can take off, because, you know, doing a brutal prune could be, it might now end well. So I'd be sending them photos and telling them where the new buds are coming, if it's only lower down, and see what they say. Good luck with that, Andrew.
Yeah, thank you.
Thanks, Andrew. And I think we've only got time for one more question in Talkback Gardening this morning. That's John from Ungara with a Youngberry tree, but it's not fruiting for you, John.
No, it's not, Sophie. It's been in for, it's flowered for 3 years. And good flowers all over it, and very healthy, but not a fruit.
Okay, so now I am not familiar with young berries to know whether they need any cool weather. So Ungara, I love Ungara. The little primary school there, I remember visiting that. This is inland on Eyre Peninsula. Tiny little community, amazing.
Yes.
I'm not sure whether young berries need any chilling because some berries are better in cooler climates than others. So I'm going to handball again to the Rare Fruit Society and see if one of their berry experts, there are some, so the amazing thing about the Rare Fruit Society, their meetings are hundreds of people, and there are people there that are just interested in berries, or there are people there that are particularly interested in stone fruits. So get in touch with them, John, and see if they can give you any suggestions on whether they have a chill factor. You know, certainly some other berries do. So good luck with that.
Thanks, Sophie.
We'll see you on Eyre Peninsula sometime. Thanks, John. And congratulations to our ABC Gardening Magazine winners today, Julie from Quorn and Mary from Redwood Park. Congratulations to you. We'll have two more to give away next weekend. Sophie Thompson, it's been such a pleasure sitting by your side at the Adelaide Central Market. Is not Sophie a gem? South Australian living legend, and we have her every Saturday morning from 8 until 9:30 here on 891 ABC Radio, Adelaide, South Australia and Broken Hill, and on Sundays from 11 until 12 with Jason Chong.
Absolutely, and happy gardening to all our listeners, and I'm excited. You and I are doing talkback gardening through Christmas.
We are, so, you know, you might be having some time off work, maybe some more time in the garden. Make that the time to ring in and keep us company through Christmas and New Year. And we'll bring all of the interesting information to you that you need from the person that brings it to us every weekend here on the radio and on Gardening Australia. Although that's on hiatus now, is it?
It is.
Not back until, is it February? Not sure. next week. I'll ask you next week.
Okay, ask me next week and I'll know. I'll be an expert by then.
So wonderful to be here, Sophie.
Happy gardening to all our listeners and to everyone in the audience.